I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Hey, man, don't touch the switch.
I'm going to touch the switch.
No, man, I don't think you should.
Oh, I'm going to.
I don't think so, man.
I flip the switch.
Good evening, class. Class is in session. Welcome to Binary Gamer. I'm your host, Tony Spears, and we are going to learn a little bit about video games today. So, last couple weeks, we had been going over the Legend of Zelda series, mostly because Q1 of next year should see the release of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild out to the world, along with the NX, which all kinds of rumors are abounding about that, which that seems pretty awesome. I don't know how I feel about it being a portable system that's going to dock and then up-res, essentially, to play on television screens, but I think Nintendo has always tried to go for some type of hook with their hardware. I mean, we saw it with the Wii, we saw it with the Wii U, obviously with the implementation of the gamepad. A lot of cool stuff going on there. From what I'm hearing and reading about the NX is that it's going to have removable controllers from the sides. So I guess it's like a, I keep picturing like the Wii U tablet, and then you just pull the controllers off, and then there's the tablet, and then you can play with the controllers if you have it docked, and then you put them back on to play with it as a handheld. I see thousands of foreseeable problems with this as far as the longevity of the hardware. I mean, I, as an adult, am capable of taking care of my games and everything, taking care of my consoles and stuff pretty well. I mean, stuff still gets worn out and damaged from time to time. With kids, though, it's almost impossible. The thumbsticks on the Wii U gamepad that I have are almost not usable. My kids barely tell the difference because they're the ones that cause the problems. Granted, they're kids. I saw this coming, but as someone that likes a little bit more precision in my Super Mario World, it's a little difficult because it's just constantly going up. Sort of drives me nuts. But again, with the removable controllers and stuff like that, like, they're going to get lost and they're going to get broke. And Nintendo's internal return policies are really good as far as like replacing stuff, but they take forever. So it's going to be one of those things where they're going to run into problems in the first few months, maybe a year of the hardware being out, but it'll eventually get there. So let's hope for the best. Yay, the NX. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about the NX. This is not a news show. We are here to teach you things. Well, I'm here to teach you things. The Wii is not here. It's downstairs. Bad joke. Anyway, so what we're going to go over for this episode is RPGs, role-playing games. Specifically, what makes like the formula to make an RPG and where it all kind of began. So if we're looking at the key things that you need to classify as an RPG, so RPG stands for role-playing game, right? You're playing the role of a character. Now, it could be argued that you're playing an RPG whenever you play any type of game because you're assuming the guise of the character, whether it be Mario or Sonic or the Dragonborn from freaking Skyrim. Any game, you're inhabiting an avatar. In an RPG, you're more or less controlling the development of the character. And so that's why you have your more classic RPGs, things like the Final Fantasy series, the earlier Final Fantasy series. I like to think that the original formula for Final Fantasy kind of ended with 10. 11, as we all know, was a MMO that fared decently for a while and then eventually kind of tapered off. 12 and 13 going on just kind of went their own route. Now, Final Fantasy XIV Realm Reborn is pretty much its own world alongside World of Warcraft and other MMOs, so that's kind of off in the distance. And as far as I can tell, Final Fantasy XV does not share any of the tropes of the original Final Fantasy series, and so while it is considered an RPG, I'm not going to classify it in the RPG as defined by what we're going to go over in this lesson. So we're looking at the original Final Fantasy. So the original Final Fantasy, what are the key ingredients that you have? So one, you have classes. Okay, so in the original Final Fantasy, you have the fighter, the thief, the black mage, white mage. I think you can pick a red mage. Yes, and a red mage. So you have your core classes, character classes, and those classes determine the type of abilities you can use. Fighters, obviously, they're tankier. They're meant to go up there and take punishment and deal it out. Black mages, offensive magic. White mages, healing magic. Red mages are kind of a mix of the two. Not great at either, but able to do both. And the thief is your more agile, get in there and do critical damage, but not able to take a large amount of damage themselves. So there's pro and con to each of the classes. Now, a lot of RPG mechanics, especially in the way that combat mechanics work and the way that like the magic systems work, are a lot of them are based, well, the root of it comes from Dungeons and Dragons, from what is considered the D20 system. So in Dungeons and Dragons, as you play as like a pen and paper game, if you want to perform an attack, you take the stats of your character and then the dice that you're allowed to roll based on the weapon that your character is equipped with, different abilities that they have to modify your dice roll. You roll to hit, which is usually a 20-sided dice. If you land your hit, then you roll your damage. That type of dice and the number of dice are all based off of, again, the weapon you have equipped. So from there, with those combinations thrown out there, then you deal your damage to the enemy, and then the round continues. The enemy will go and get damage once their initiative comes up, so on and so forth. So a lot of these mechanics from Dungeons and Dragons are translated into the original Final Fantasy and subsequent RPGs along the way. Now, further on in the lesson, we're going to start getting into the difference between Western RPGs and traditional Japanese RPGs, but we're not there yet, but stick with me. So again, the mechanics of the D&D system, the D20 system, are translated over to Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy finds itself in this really cool spot where video games had gotten to the point to where they could run the calculations of a dice roll in the game without you having to do it. So in Final Fantasy, your fighter goes up, does an attack. It's still taking numbers based off of the stats of the fighter based on his level. So a level 1 fighter is not going to be as strong as a level 5 fighter. Your level 5 fighter is going to have different stats progressively as he goes up in level. Usually there's some type of multiplier involved, especially in a lot of the earlier games. It's usually a 0.75 multiplier of the stat as they progress. So actually the further along you get, the stronger they get. But in the early going, it's not as big as a jump. Level 1 to level 2, you're not seeing too big of a difference. But it's also easier to get from level 2 from level 1 as opposed to, say, from level 15 to level 16. So that's kind of where your trade-off is at. 15 to 16 is going to give you more power. Level 1 to level 2 is going to happen faster. But that's beside the point. So now we have these systems, these basic combat systems implemented in the game. And again, translated over and simplified, really, for the purpose of the game, which allows the game to function as a better, more fluid combat system. Now, the original Final Fantasy, all the way up until Final Fantasy VI, had turn-based combat. So essentially, whoever had the faster speed, which translates into initiative for the game, gets to attack first. So your faster initiative, the original Final Fantasy, again, you have your thief. Your thief typically has faster speed, thusly a faster initiative. The thief is going to have faster speed than, say, a bat. The bat does not get to go first. The thief does. Thief goes to attack. Thief lands 3 damage out of the 5 hit points that the bat has. The bat now has a remaining 2 hit points. Now, if the other party members don't have a speed stat or initiative that is faster than the bat, now it's the bat's turn, and the bat is going to attack whoever it wants to based on a random number generator, or RNG, determined by the game, and it's going to take its turn, then the turn moves on to the next higher speed stat, and so on and so forth until the battle is complete. Now, when you break it down into the parts that really make it work, the cogs that are back there making everything tick. It sounds complicated, but really what it comes down to is just, you know, higher stats and who has the better equipment. It's a big numbers game, big number crunch. That's really what D&D is. Role-playing video games allow for that same type of system to be used, but it's all done for you. So essentially, you look at D&D, and that's doing long division on a piece of paper, whereas playing, say, Final Fantasy VI is like doing long division with a TI-81 calculator. You're still having to put in the commands, but once you hit the execute button, the solution's there for you. Ta-da! See? Math and video games. It does work. So, there's your basic mechanics. Now, what else does it take in order for you to have a RPG? Many people would argue that story is a big part of an RPG, of what really defines a good role-playing game. There's no point in trying to assume the role of the character if you don't care what their mission is, if you don't care what the overall objective is, or like, you know, like who's in the castle to save, or why the world's in peril, things like that. Now, granted, you could also compare it to Mario. Mario has to go and save Princess Peach from Bowser. Yeah, you could say that that is definitely a story, but there's no real depth to the story. You just know that Peach was with Mario. Peach is kidnapped by Bowser and taken away. Mario's like, bro, not cool. Goes to get his girl back. I get it. I've been there. Now, in an RPG, you could have the same thing happen. You could have Hero X and Princess Y are together. Bad guy Z comes in and takes Princess Y away. This may sound familiar, kind of like The Legend of Zelda. And now Hero X is like, yo, gotta go get my girl back. Now, the difference, though, is that the journey in between of Hero X going to go fight bad guy Z to get back Princess Y, in the middle of that, there's more story developing. You could run into other characters, whether they be NPCs or party characters that have their own stories to flesh out, that, you know, creates more of a, not, I don't want to say like a sub-quest, that's kind of belittling, especially to a lot of like really good, you know, secondary characters in video games, like, you know, Cid from Final Fantasy VII, the doll's name from Super Mario RPG, can't remember his name now. Oh my gosh, that's going to bother me. But, regardless, a lot of other characters can have good stories to flesh out, and sometimes you want to see those come to fruition before you're going to go off and save Princess Y. Now, does that mean you have to? Not necessarily. Sometimes they do play key roles in progressing what is considered the main story, but for the most part, the side quests are just kind of there to add flavor, to flesh out the world, to flesh out characters, to make you care about them more, because what's the point in having this guy in my party if I don't even know who he is? He's just some nameless, faceless black mage. I don't give a crap. Granted, all black mages are faceless, but when it really comes down to it, you kind of want to know the guy behind the hat. So, that's the thing. I mean, prime example, the only reason anybody gave a crap about Vivi in Final Fantasy IX is because he's kind of tragic in his own way. Like, you sort of feel for the guy. He's got all this power, and he doesn't really know what to do with all of it. But you wouldn't have cared if they didn't put some kind of story behind him, because he looks like the stereotypical black mage. He's a little dude in a blue tunic and that weird hat, and you don't ever see his face. And he's just walking around freaking casting fireball here and there and freaking dropping blizzards on folks. But because they flesh him out with a side story, you get to really know the character, and thusly you care more for him. And that's the difference between an RPG and what you would consider your standard, like, platformer or, you know, an action game, something like that. Now, not to say action games can't have good story. In recent years, action games have had phenomenal stories. If you call back to like The Last of Us, the Uncharted series, great stories. They're all action platforming games. No real RPG elements going on there. The only real progression in the character you're getting is like better weapons, maybe some better equipment, maybe an ability here or there, but there's no stat increase. There's no change really in the way that you're fighting your enemies. Granted, you may run into harder enemies, but that's only because the difficulty has to scale in order to keep it engaging along the path of the game until you reach the conclusion. So that's one of the big differences between what you'd consider your traditional RPG and an action platformer. Your action platformer is going to have like character development and story development, but you're not going to have those same mechanics. So again, big differences. So let's say story is not the key thing. Let's say it's setting. Now, a lot of the Final Fantasy series, again, comes back to a lot of like, well, fantasy settings. It's Final Fantasy, right? The original Final Fantasy, it's a high fantasy medieval setting. Same thing with Final Fantasy 2, 3, which is actually 6, but it was 3 in the States. 7 is a departure from that because you have more of a like steampunk techno kind of a cyber dystopian thing going on, especially in the first couple hours because you're in Midgar. And at first you're like, oh man, like, this, you know, this is the game world. This is where I'm going to play. And you're going through and you're playing and everything's cool. But then you finally leave Midgar and you're like, oh my gosh, there's the rest of this world. There's huge. In fact, there's, I think, like 4 other discs worth of world in this game. When Final Fantasy VII came out, it was in a big box. It was like this big. It was huge. And like, you hadn't seen games like that before. But the PS1 was doing a lot of stuff because they had these CDs and this technology was just womping everybody's ass, and they decided that they were going to go and make this huge game, but in order to do it, they had to put it on 5 discs. It was madness. No, I'm sorry. 4 discs. 4 discs. My numbers get all mixed up. I apologize. But yeah, 4 discs for a game. That was mind-blowing. Before then, the most you ever saw was 2. 3 if it was something ambitious. But again, I digress. Same thing in Chrono Trigger, if we're talking about setting. Chrono Trigger jumps from setting to setting all the time. You're traversing the same world, technically the same map, but you're going through different timelines. So you begin in what is considered the present day, and Chrono is living in kind of a, I don't want to say it's fantasy, but it's more of a like rural fantasy, I guess you'd say. Like, it's not really old timey because there's ships and kind of technology. Like, it's almost like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like Neverland meets the Renaissance, that kind of thing. Maybe that's a bad example. Well, you get my drift. If you play Chrono Trigger, you know, you understand what I'm saying. Like, when you go to the Millennia Fair in the beginning, like, it's really cool. Like, it looks like an old, like, it looks like a Renaissance fair, but there's a robot involved, and friggin' your best friend has made a teleporting machine that turns into a time machine, you come to find out. That got weird. Anyway, but so, again, it jumps from setting to setting, because you go from the first setting at the Millennia Fair to, all of a sudden, you're in the far future, and everything's kind of crap, and there's these big domes and there's robots everywhere and like mutant slime, all kinds of crap. And then you go to like the enlightened era where, you know, there's technology so advanced it almost looks like, science so advanced it looks like magic. Got that one from Thor. Thanks, Marvel. And then you go all the way back to prehistoric times where there's no technology at all and it's not really high fantasy, but you're fighting pterodactyls that talk. Like, the setting varies greatly in that game, and that's one of the hallmarks of that game, is you're jumping from time point to time point. It's all super cool because you're still seeing the same map, but it's all changed and it's all flipped around. And then once you get the spaceship that allows you to fly around everywhere, you can see the whole map. It looks rad. It's pretty awesome. So then the next ingredient that we look at that might just be the sum of the whole is characters. Do characters play the key role in defining what's an RPG? Now, if you think about it, a lot of time when you think of an RPG, you think back to the characters. The characters are what stand out to you the most in a lot of cases. Chrono Trigger, not so much, because Chrono is a silent protagonist, but a lot of the other characters are very memorable. You have Robo, you have Frog, you have Magus, you have all of the side characters that, you know, they all have a lot of personality. But then, again, you're playing Chrono, you're embodying Chrono, and you as Chrono, you can't put your own words into the game because that breaks the plot. So instead he plays as a silent protagonist, which is fine for a while, but that gets kind of boring. But then you have a game, say like Final Fantasy VII, Cloud, Sephiroth, Tifa, all of them real good characters, real deep. And if you dig into the different side stories and side quests involved a lot of characters, you learn a lot and you start to grow a connection with a lot of these characters. And in that game, there are even characters that you might not even ever see if you're not looking for them. Prime example, Vincent. You can go through the whole game and never find that character. There's a special spot you got to go to. It's a cave, and you go and you put in this code, and you go down. He's in a coffin because he's a vampire. So many people I know are just like, I don't think he's a vampire. Nah, bro. He's in a coffin in the dark. The dude dresses like a freaking Hot Topic cashier reject. No, he's a vampire. Like, done and done. And then you have Yuffie. Yuffie lives in that island. You don't have to interact with her. And realistically, you don't have to get her into the party if you don't want to. Same thing with Kate Sith. So there are characters you could totally skip, never know their stories. But if you take the time, go the extra mile, you can get those characters into your party. They end up being a huge benefit in combat and a lot of other things. And then on top of that, if you really dig into the side stories, Vincent's stuff is kind of tragic. Kate Sith kind of is too. Yuffie, not so much. I mean, she's a ninja. She wants to be a Hokage. Okay, that's cool. You and every other Naruto. All the Narutos, as a matter of fact. So then we look at other characters that don't really play as deep of a role in the game, and so you're not really attached. Like the original Final Fantasy, you're just fighter or black mage or white mage. So the characters aren't really as key to the story there, but they're propelled through the story, and you use them as a vessel to get from point A to point B in order to reach the conclusion. So in essence, you're kind of writing the story for them by taking them along in the game. Now, honestly, out of the four main things that I talked about here, mechanics, story, setting, and characters, I honestly think out of all of them, setting is kind of the weak link here. Now, again, setting can be really important because there are certain games that if the setting isn't good, it pulls you out of the experience because you just don't care. Prime example, I Am Setsuna just recently was released, and that game's really cool and everything, has a lot of vibes of like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy X. It's actually gotten some pretty good reviews, but also the setting's very bland. It's all snow all the time. It looks like, you know, it looks like freaking North Dakota in the middle of February the entire game. Like, why? Doesn't make any sense. Like, change it up a little bit. But again, design choice. I'm not a game designer. I'm pretty sure they had their reasons, but it's one of those things that you kind of sit back and after you play through it and you're listening to the soundtrack of the game and you're trudging through the same snow over and over again throughout this entire story, which it takes a while to complete that game from what I'm told, then yeah, that can get old quick just seeing the same bland white or in any other game, like the same green or the same brown. It would just get old. So while I personally think setting is kind of the weak link out of all these, it's not necessarily unnecessary, if that makes sense. Like, just throwing in any setting doesn't make a game better. It does still add greatly to the sum of the parts, but at the same time, it kind of ranks as number 4 in my overall importance factor. Now, for me personally, I think mechanics are the most important part. The reason why is because the mechanics are what make the RPG. Granted, the story is very important as well. Without the story, you don't care why you're doing what you're doing. But mechanics are what can separate a game that you love and a game you don't like so much. Prime example, Final Fantasy VII to Final Fantasy VIII. Final Fantasy VII I really liked, not because there was a big difference in the combat systems. The combat systems are almost identical, actually. It's an active time battle system in there, which you essentially have to go and input commands, but they don't execute until a time bar or like a turn bar fills. Once the turn bar fills, you go and you execute the command that you put in. Now, in between then, if you decide you want to attack and before your bar fills, you decide, oh, no, I want to use an item. As long as you get that item command put in before the bar fills, you'll use the item, not do the attack. It's pretty smart if you decide you want to change up your tactics in the middle of, you know, in the middle of combat before your turn comes around. Allows you to react to the other characters' actions. Now, where's the big difference between Final Fantasy VII and VIII is their magic system. Now, the Final Fantasy games usually have some type of unique magic system in all of them. So in Final Fantasy VII, you have the Materia system, and then in Final Fantasy VIII, I can't remember the name of it exactly, but essentially you're copying abilities and spells from your enemies, and then you learn them, and then after that you go and essentially you master it, and then you can use it in your repertoire, right? So that's cool, but the reason I like the Materia system better is because the Materia system gives you essentially a physical manifestation of the spell. So like fire, you have the spell fire. It's a red Materia. You're going to take that, well, actually it's a green Materia. Green Materia are spells. You're going to take that Materia and you're going to slot it into a weapon or a piece of armor, and then you're going to use that Materia until it matures. And then as it matures, it gets, essentially, your character gets experience and your Materia get experience, and when your Materia levels up, I keep thinking I'm saying it wrong, I think it's Materia. Someone write in and let me know, because I'm pretty sure it's Materia, but it might be Materia. I don't know. I haven't actually said the word out loud in years, so I'm probably wrong. But anyway, I'm going to go with what I know, Materia. So as your Matera goes and levels up and essentially gets its full 5-star level. So it starts out with 1 star and then goes all the way up to 5. Some have more, some have 7, I think. But once it's mastered, it's full power, and then you can give that to anybody at full power, and then they'll be able to know all those spells. So you start with fire, and then you get fire 2, and then you get fire 3. Once you get fire 3 and it gets mastered, super cool, that's awesome. You can go and give it to someone else, and now they know fire 3. It's pretty rad. Same thing with all different materia in that game. You have support materia, which allows you to do like support abilities to, well, add support abilities to the to like offensive materia or like to healing materia. So like you can get a all, A-L-L, and then add that to heal, and then you can heal everybody in your party instead of just one person. Or you can add it to fire, and you can cast fire on everybody instead of just one enemy, which is nice. And then you have your summons, so on and so forth. It's very different in 8. In 8, you defeat summons and capture them, essentially kind of Pokemon them, and then you get to use a summon, and then with spells, like I said, you're copying it from your enemies and then you master it yourself, but then only that character can use that ability. So you kind of have to pick and choose who you want to know what. Not my preferred method. Now, if you want to see kind of the weird offspring of that whole idea, look at Final Fantasy X and the grid sphere system. The grid sphere system is probably one of the greatest worst ideas ever. Because you start out at one point with your character, and then you can move throughout the grid sphere in order to learn different abilities, learn different spells, increase your stats, things like that. But eventually, at some point, you'll bleed into another character's area, and so you can cross abilities there. You can learn someone else's abilities. It's really cool if you want to be able to give people, you know, different bits of flavor from other classes and other characters. But man, if you're not on it, like if you're not really paying attention to what you're doing when it comes to placing your stats, you are going to get confused. I got desperately confused the first time I played that game because I'm really bad at paying attention to tutorials or honestly any kind of instruction. But so the first time I played the game, I didn't pay attention to the tutorial for the grid sphere system, and it kind of threw me for a loop. I ended up actually having to restart my game because it just turned out so bad. It was pretty bad. But yeah, so that's one of the main differentiations between a lot of the Final Fantasy games is you have a lot of different like magic systems. Once they went to the active time battle system, they never really got away from it until like later games where it was real-time combat. Final Fantasy 12 and 13 had real-time combat. Then if you want to change over completely, you have, say, Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger, you have turn-based... It's still kind of an active time battle system. Groups of three, or three-person party. But then the big difference there is that they have what is essentially a combo system. So the different combinations of techs or techniques that you can use are based on your party configuration. Sorry, my voice is getting a little hoarse. Hold... Not a sponsor, I promise. For those listening to the audio, I just took a swig of Monster and feeling a lot better now. Anyway, so the different combinations you can do, again, are based on the configuration of your party. So you'll have different options based on who you have, and you need to change who you have based on the people that the enemies that you're going to fight. If you're in a place where there's a lot of fire-based enemies, you're probably going to want Frog. Frog has water-based magic. If you have a lot of enemies that are, say, ice or water types, I guess you'd say, then you probably want someone with fire-type abilities. Or if you want someone that's just going to deal out a lot of hurting, then you usually bring in Chrono and Robo, and then they just punch people to death. And then there's certain three-person combinations that just whoop everybody. By the end, I'm telling you, it's Magus, the chick that throws the fireball, she has the gun, can't remember her name. God, I'm so bad at this. I need to start just writing down names and notes and stuff. But, and then Robo, and then you just whoop everybody, because you do this, like, weird, like, dark magic fireball laser combination that just destroys everything, except for Lavos. Lavos destroys everybody. At one point, he kills Chrono. But again, that comes down to the story. In Chrono Trigger, the main character dies. And you're like, what the F? What is going on here? My brain was not ready for this. But then he kind of comes back and it does the whole like Jesus moment thing where you're like, oh, Chrono's back and now he knows how to save us and yay everything. And it's good. I mean, the story in that game is great. Yeah, that's really hard to deny. But I mean, at the same time, there's certain points in the story where you're just kind of like, and that's going to happen. Oh, it did. Yay. So, I mean, it's all about what you like. But yeah, so that's going to be it for this episode of Binary Gamer. I'm not wanting to cut this off like super quick, but I have reached my 30-minute classroom time limit, and unfortunately, we're only in the intro of RPGs. This is going to be awesome because we're really here to find out what makes an RPG great and what are the great RPGs and why. Again, I'm a big fan of mechanics in games. I find that if the mechanics work right, based on the flavor you're looking for, you can find the game that you love. The story, you'll fall in love with the story because you love playing the game. But that's all up to debate and interpretation. That's why I have the email for you guys to hit me up at. The email is binarygamerpodcast@gmail.com. Hit me up there. Let me know what you think. Comments, concerns, complaints, anything you got. That's fine. What's your favorite RPG? What's your favorite RPG character? Is it because of the story? Is it because of the setting? Is everything I'm saying wrong? Let me know. Tell me. But yeah, interaction is always great, and I definitely want to hear more from you guys. So, again, this is going to be it for Binary Gamer. My name is Tony Spears. Thank you for tuning in. Check us out over on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, YouTube, all those places. And yeah, that's it. Class dismissed.